In the darkness outside, I got into the passenger seat of a little Morris 8 and waited for a few moments while Claude squeezed his bulk behind the wheel. As we set off, he began to talk about his recent visit to Bradford, where he had been taking part in a wrestling match. We had to go through Raines Village on the way back, and as we left the houses behind and began the ascent to the Abbey, he suddenly stopped talking. Then he startled me as he snapped upright in his seat and pointed ahead. "Look! Look, there is that bloody monk!" "Where? Where?" I feigned ignorance, but I had seen it all right. The cowled, slow-pacing figure heading for the wood. Claude's foot was on the board and the car was screaming up the hill. At the top, he swung savagely onto the roadside grass so that the headlights blazed into the depth of the wood. And as he leapt from the car, there was a fleeting moment when his quarry was in full view. A monk, skirts hitched high, legging it with desperate speed among the trees. The big man reached into the back of the car and pulled out what looked like a heavy walking stick. "After the bugger!" he shouted, plunging eagerly forward. I panted after him. "Look, wait a minute! What are you going to do to him if you catch him?" "I'm going to come across his arse with me ash plant," Claude said with chilling conviction, and galloped ahead of me till he disappeared from the circle of light. He was making a tremendous noise, beating against the tree trunks and emitting a series of intimidating shouts. My heart bled for the hapless spectre blundering in the darkness with the policeman's cries dinning in his ears. I waited with tingling horror for the final confrontation, and the tension increased as time passed and I could still hear Claude in full cry. "Come out of there, you can't get away, come on, show yourself!" while his splintering blows echoed among the trees. I did my own bit of searching but found nothing. The monk did indeed seem to have disappeared, and when I finally returned to the car I found the big man already there. "Well, that's a rum of Mr. Herriot," he said. "I can't find him and I can't think where he's got to. I was hard on his heels when I first spotted him, and he can't get out of the wood because I can see over the fields in the moonlight. I've had a scout round the abbey too, but he isn't there. He's just bloody vanished." I was going to say something like, "Well, what else could you expect from a ghost?" but the huge hand was still swinging that stick, and I decided against it. "Well, I reckon we'd better get on to Darrowby," the policeman grunted, stamping his feet on the frosty turf. I shivered. It was bitterly cold, with an east wind getting up, and I was glad to climb back into the car. In Darrowby, I had a few companionable beers with Claude at his favourite haunt, the Black Bull, and it was 10:30 when I got into Skeldale House. There was no sign of Tristan, and I felt a twinge of anxiety. It must have been after midnight when I was awakened by a faint scuffling from the next room. Tristan occupied what had been the long, narrow dressing room in the grand days when the house was young. I jumped out of bed and opened the communicating door. Tristan was in pyjamas and he cuddled two hot water bottles to his bosom. He turned his head and gave me a single, haggard glance before pushing one of the bottles well down the bed. Then he crawled between the sheets and lay on his back with the second bottle clasped across his chest and his eyes fixed on the ceiling. I went over and looked down at him in some concern. He was shaking so much that the whole bed vibrated with him. "How are you, Tris?" I whispered. After a few moments, a faint croak came up.
"Frozen to the bloody marrow, Jim."
"But where the heck have you been?"
Again the croak.
"In a drain pipe."
"A drain pipe? Where?" The head rolled feebly from side to side on the pillow.
"Up at the wood. Didn't you see the pipes by the roadside?"
A great light flashed.
"Of course, yes. They're going to put a new sewer into the village, aren't they?" "That's right,"
Tristan whispered.
"When I saw that big bloke pounding into the wood, I cut straight back and dived into one of the pipes. Oh, God knows how long I was in there."
"But why didn't you come out after he left?" A violent shudder shook the young man's frame and he closed his eyes briefly.
I couldn't hear a thing in there. I was jammed tight with my cowl over my ears and there was a 90-mile-an-hour wind screaming down the pipe. I didn't hear the car start, and I didn't come out in case that chap was still standing there with his bloody great shillelagh."
He took hold of the quilt with one hand and picked at it fitfully.
"Well, never mind, Tris," I said. "You'll soon get warmed up, and you'll be all right after a night's sleep."
Tristan didn't appear to have heard.
"They're horrible things, drain pipes, Jim."
He looked up at me with hunted eyes.
"They're full of muck, and they stink of cat's pee-pee.
I know. I know.
I put his hand back inside the quilt and pulled the sheets up round his chin. You'll be fine in the morning. I switched off the light and tiptoed from the room. As I closed the door, I could still hear his teeth chattering. Clearly it wasn't only the cold that was bothering him. He was still in a state of shock. And no wonder. The poor fellow had been enjoying a little session of peaceful haunting with never a care in the world, when, without warning, there was a scream of brakes, a blaze of light, and that giant bounding into the middle of it all like a demon king. It had all been too much. Next morning at the breakfast table, Tristan was in poor shape. He looked very pale, he ate little, and at intervals his body was racked by deep coughing spasms. Siegfried looked at him quizzically.
I know what's done this to you. I know why you're sitting there like a zombie, coughing your lungs up.
His brother stiffened in his chair and a tremor crossed his face.
You do?
Yes. I hate to say I told you so, but I did warn you, didn't I? It's all those bloody cigarettes.
Tristan never did give up smoking. But the Rain's ghost was seen no more, and remains an unsolved mystery to this day. Chapter 16. This was one for Granville Bennett. I liked a bit of small animal surgery, and was gradually doing more as time went on, but this one frightened me. A 12-year-old spaniel bitch in the last stages of pyometritis. Pus dripping from her vulva onto the surgery table. Temperature 104, panting, trembling, and as I held my stethoscope against her chest, I could hear the classic signs of valvular insufficiency. A dicky heart was just what I needed on top of everything else. Drinking a lot of water, is she? I asked. Old Mrs. Barker twisted the strings of her shopping bag anxiously.
Aye, she never seems to be away from that water bowl, but she won't eat, hasn't had a bite for the last 4 days.
Well, I don't know. I took off my stethoscope and stuffed it into my pocket. You should have brought her in a long time ago. She must have been ill for weeks.
Well, not rightly ill,
but a bit off it. I thought there was nothing to worry about as long as she was eating. I didn't say anything for a few moments. I had no desire to upset the old girl, but she had to be told.
I'm afraid this is rather serious, Mrs. Barker. The condition has been building up for a long time. It's in her womb, you see. A bad infection, and the only cure is an operation. Well, will you do it, please?
The old lady's lips quivered. I came round the table and put my hand on her shoulder.
Look, I'd like to, but there are snags. She's in poor shape and 12 years old. Really a poor operation risk. I'd like to take her through to the veterinary hospital in Hartington and let Mr. Bennett operate on her. All right, she said, nodding eagerly. I don't care what it costs. Oh, we'll keep it down as much as possible.
I walked along the passage with her and showed her out of the door.
Leave her with me. I'll look after her, don't worry. What's her name, by the way?
Dinah,
she replied huskily, still peering past me down the passage. I went through and lifted the phone. 30 years ago, country practitioners had to turn to the small animal experts when anything unusual cropped up in that line. It is different nowadays when our practices are more mixed. In Darraby now, we have the staff and equipment to tackle any type of small animal surgery, but it was different then. I'd heard it said that sooner or later, every large animal man had to scream for help from Granville Bennett, and now it was my turn.
Hello, is that Mr. Bennett?
It is indeed.
A big voice, friendly, full of give. Harriet here. I'm with Farnan in Darraby.
Of course! Heard of you, laddie. Heard of you.
Oh, thanks. Look, I've got a bit of a sticky job here. I wonder if you take it on for me.
Delighted, laddie. What is it?
A real stinking pio.
Oh, lovely.
The bitch is 12 years old.
Splendid.
And toxic as hell.
Excellent.
And one of the worst hearts I've heard for a long time.
Fine, fine.
When are you coming through? This evening, if that's okay with you, about 8.
Couldn't be better, laddie. See you.